Think back. If you encountered a live animal today, a dog or cat, squirrel or bird, mosquito or bee, did you see it, hear it, smell it? Did you stop and think about how that creature might have been sensing you? Our next guest says trying to imagine how other non-human animals experience the world we share can open us up to entirely new appreciations of our surroundings and the beauty and complexity of animals. He digs into the science of animal senses in a new book, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. What are the animals in your life that you see? Domestic, pets, barnyard, backyard, wild animals? Do you spend much time observing or trying to get to know them? What questions do you have about how animals experience and sense the world? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Ed Young is a science writer at The Atlantic and author of I Contain Multitudes, The Microbes Within Us, and A Grander View of Life. His newest book is called An Immense World, How Animal Senses Reveal the Hidden Realms Around Us. Ed, welcome back to Central Time.
Hi, thanks so much for having me again.
One word appears a lot in your book. It's a German word, Umwelt. And it's this idea of, how animals perceive the world. Can you talk a little bit about that concept?
Yeah, the Umwelt is the particular slice of the world that each animal can perceive. The unique sets of sights and sounds and textures and smells that it's privy to, but that other creatures might not be able to sense. So we humans, for example, our Umwelt includes a lot of colors that my dog, for example, cannot see. But we cannot sense the Earth's magnetic field in the same way that a songbird might be able to. We can't sense a lot of colors that songbird can see. We can't sense the electric fields that a shark or a duckbill platypus might be able to sense. Each creature is limited in its own way. And even though our senses give us this powerful illusion that we have a complete and total perception of the world, that very much is an illusion. We are all trapped in this specific sensory bubble, and that is what the Umwelt is.
Before we get into some specific senses, one thing that struck me is there's a lot of science looking at the way animals sense the world, and we know a lot, but we don't know a lot. There's a lot of frontiers in this field of study.
There's so much we don't know. I mean, people have been puzzling over this for millennia, but even then, new senses keep on being discovered. You know, things like echolocation, how bats use sonar to navigate their way around, was only discovered in the 40s. Magnetoreception, how animals sense the Earth's magnetic field, was only really known since like the 60s and 70s. And even now, there's so much we don't know. I think there's more unknown than known. And partly that's because each creature has its own Umwelt. So every animal out there is, this whole other world for us to learn about and to imagine.
Let's start with an animal that a lot of us do get to witness in action using this sense a lot. Dogs and their sense of smell. First of all, talk about the mechanics. What's going on when a dog is smelling something that works maybe a little differently than we do?
Yeah, so all of the stuff inside the dog's nose and brain that's devoted to smell, the cells that pick up odors in the air, the neurons that send information to the brain, the parts of the brain that analyze those smells, there's just more of all of that stuff. But there are also certain like anatomical specializations in the dog's nose that make it just amazing at smelling. For example, when I inhale, all of the air rushes past my nose, but most it all then goes into my lungs. When I exhale, I blow out a lot of the odors that are then trapped in my nose. The dog actually splits that airflow into two so that there's a part that's devoted entirely to smell and doesn't go to the lungs. And so all the odors that a dog inhales just sits there. They're not constantly pushed out in the way that ours are. The dog's nose also, next time you look at your dog's nose, note that there are slits that go to the sides. The nostrils curve around. That's really special. So when a dog exhales, you might think that its breath pushes away odors on the ground in front of it. But in fact, those side slits create these little whirling vortices of air that sweep those odors into the nose. So regardless of whether the dog is inhaling or exhaling, it's getting this continuous conveyor belt of scent coming into its head.
We're talking to Ed Yong about his new book, An Immense World, How Animal Senses Reveal the Hidden Realms Around Us. You can join in if you have a question about how animals sense the world at 800-642-1234. If you have a dog and you want to share its story of hunting for smells, 800-642-1234 is the number. Ed, people might look at the dog's nostrils and say, aha, dogs are better at smelling than we humans, or they're twice as good at smelling as some other animal. One big takeaway I got from your book is it's really hard to compare better or worse in our sensory world.
Totally. Yeah. So when these numbers keep on cropping up, but what does it mean to be better at smelling, right? Do you smell a wider range of things? Can you detect them at smaller concentrations or from greater distances away? In some cases, humans actually perform just as well as dogs as discriminating between different odors, but dogs are just much better at using their noses. They're more experienced at it. They have that distinctive anatomy that I told you about that means that they're very good at sniffing continuously. And, you know, partly the difference is just very obvious to anyone who owns a dog. Like, we go outside, I walk around my neighborhood with my dog, Typo. He's a corgi. And, you know, the neighborhood seems the same to me. It doesn't seem to be changing all that often. But to him, every walk is an adventure because to his nose, things keep on changing all the time. Like new other dogs have walked past and left scent behind. They've peed on things. They've left scent in their footsteps. He can get all of that. And so when we go on walks, I start understanding that the world around me is actually changing in really dramatic ways that I can't perceive, but that he, with his nose, which he uses very well and knows how to use, really can perceive.
And a big bit of practical advice you give in the book is, if you have a dog, let it smell stuff. Could you talk about what that does for your dog?
Yeah, I think it's a shame that a lot of dog owners sort of yank dogs along on their walks. You know, they see the walk as a trip from A to B or purely about exercise. I think of the walk as a chance for the dog, for Typo to be a dog. And that means sniffing. Like if I, at least on one walk a day, he decides the pace of the walk, whatever he wants to sniff, with some small exceptions, he gets to sniff. And when we give him that agency, the walks take a long time. They're very slow. And I think that's good for him. You know, to deprive him of that is to deprive him of a huge part of his doghood. And there have been studies showing that dogs are happier, right, more optimistic, less anxious when they get a chance to really use their noses in the way that, in the way that they have evolved to.
Bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jim is on the line. Jim, hi.
Hello. This is Jim.
And what do you want to ask about, Jim?
I want to ask I'm curious how dogs are able to discern like cancer or diabetes in a person. What is that sense involved? It seems such a minute change. What is going through their noses when they're able to figure that stuff out? Or how do they train them to even do that?
Jim, thanks for the call. It wasn't a healthcare thing, Ed, but you went to a fine scent training program for dogs.
Oh, I didn't, but one of the scientists I spoke
to
did. And yes, Jim is right. There have been a lot of studies showing that dogs can sniff out the scent of different diseases, everything from cancer to diabetes to even COVID. Now, whether that makes sense as a practical screening option in a medical setting, I'm a little dubious about, but it does show the amazing capacity of a dog's nose. And this really is just about smell. It's about the fact that disease changes the physiology of a person's body, and it changes the kinds of chemicals that we release from our skin. You know, all animals, all living things really are just leaking bags of chemicals. We all release scent, whether we like it or not. And things about our lives, our health, change the nature of that scent. Dogs can detect that, and the training them really just involves giving them a decent sample of healthy or sick individuals and letting them, letting their noses do their thing. It sort of reflects the kind of stuff that dogs do all the time. You know, we can train dogs to detect like explosives or drugs. You know, there are even dogs that scientists have trained to detect like the smell of whale poop so that they can find whales in the open ocean for their research. These are all sorts of, these all feel a little bit like parlor tricks to me, and they're incredible, but the dogs are doing this all the time. So when my dog goes on a walk and he's sniffing patches of pee that other dogs have left behind, I think that he can get stuff about their health, their maybe what they've eaten recently, or all kinds of information that I wouldn't be able to get. And you know, to me, when he does that, it feels to me like me checking my social media feeds. You know, it's an update on what all the dogs in the neighborhood are up to and how well they're doing right now.
Thanks for the call, Jim. We're talking to Ed Yong about his new book, An Immense World, How Animal Senses Reveal the Hidden Realms Around Us. Do you have a question about how particular animals perceive the world, see, smell, feel, magnetify, you name it? Is there an animal you've observed and wondered, what the heck are they doing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We've been talking about dogs and smell. We're going to get into some less familiar territory coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with science writer Ed Yong about his new book, An Immense World, How Animal Senses Reveal the Hidden Realms Around Us. You can join in with your questions at 800-642-1234. All right, Ed, let's check out a sense that we humans probably don't have, the ability to sense the Earth's magnetic field. A lot of species can do this, apparently.
Yeah, songbirds can do this. You know, a lot of the very simple birds that we see around us all the time have this ability. Sea turtles can do it. Some moths and very simple insects can do it. This ability it essentially gives them a built-in compass. It allows them to migrate over long distances and to keep their bearing without any other kind of landmark or any kind of hint. And you know, their abilities are truly extraordinary. You know, you can take a baby turtle that just hatches on the beach in Florida. That turtle, if you left it to its own devices, would head into the ocean and do a decade-long lap of the Atlantic, heading towards Europe and then back again to the US. If you expose that baby turtle to the kind of magnetic field it would experience at different parts of that journey, it will then swim in the right direction for that part of the world, even if it has never been in the water before. And that's, to me, incredible. You know, it has this sort of built-in magnetic sense, not only compass, but kind of a map of the Earth's magnetic field that would allow it to move over these continental distances.
A big question, an unanswered question, is how? Like, what is it in an animal, a turtle, a songbird, whatever, that allows them, what's their magnet nose?
Yeah, right. It's a fantastic question, because we, for other senses, we know the answer, right? Like with vision, I see with my eyes. I can tell you in great detail exactly the molecular things that are going on in my eyes that allow me to see. I can't tell you that for magnetoreception. I can't even tell you where the compass is in these animals. This is a subject of huge debate. There are lots of theories, but there's no conclusive answer yet. And partly that's because the magnetic field of the Earth moves through our flesh. So the organ that detects it doesn't need to be on the surface like an eye or an ear. It could be anywhere. It could be in the turtle's butt. It could be distributed throughout the turtle's body. And so finding it is incredibly hard. And it's not helped by the fact that magnetism is very counterintuitive. You know, it's hard to explain how it works. It's hard to explain how an animal might be able to sense it. And the magnetic field is incredibly faint. So whatever they're doing, you know, it's something quite special, and something that defies like the way we think about the senses normally.
Let's go back to our callers now. Angela is with us in Baraboo. Angela, hello.
Hi.
What do you want to tell us about?
Well, I have a goose that I raised from a baby. She imprinted on me. And she was always very sweet and kind. But one day when I took her out of her enclosure, I was wearing my husband's jacket, which I didn't normally wear whenever I interacted with her. And she beat me up so bad. She scratched me. She hit me with her head. She pecked me. As soon as I took the jacket off, she was her usual sweet self. So
what was the jacket, Angela?
Well, it was just a red flannel jacket, but it was something that I'd never worn before. And it was cold, so I just put it on, but she was unfamiliar with it. So,
Angela, thanks for the call. Ed, clearly, in this case, a goose sensed something and didn't like it, which opens the door. Like, how do animals then interpret and take action based on some of their sensory input?
Right, right. And, you know, I should clarify for all of our listeners that I probably cannot explain to you why the animal in your life does the weird thing that it does. There are so many possibilities here, right? And I think that's part of like the joy of thinking about this topic. So was it something to do with smell? We know that birds, contrary to popular perception, do have a decent sense of smell. You know, was it something to do with color? The jacket might look red to Angela, but does it look to a different, something different to a goose? Probably, like something bad. I don't know. Right. Or like, is there something to do with sound, right? Is there something to do with the way the jacket is rustling? Like it's really hard to nail down any of these possible options. And probably, you know, Angela doesn't want to really test it out by wearing the jacket more and risking another encounter. But I do think that what this says, and probably a lot of listeners have experiences like this, is that animals do sense things in strange ways and in ways that are different to what we sense and that can make their behavior very difficult to predict.
Thanks a lot for that call, Angela. We're talking to Ed Young about his new book, An Immense World, How Animal Senses Reveal the Hidden Realms Around Us. I want to talk about one we rely on a lot, Ed, and it's vision. And so I might think, okay, I see stuff, animals see stuff, I get it. I get what they're doing. Our eyes are really unique, and different animals, their whole eye systems are radically different. Can you share some of your favorites?
Yeah. So, you know, here's a very simple example. Our eyes face forward. So for the humans who can see, our visual world is in front of us and we move into it. But like a bird's visual world, say Angela's goose, it surrounds it. You know, its eyes are on the side, so it can see to the sides and probably a little bit behind. So its visual world is all around and it moves through it. You know, a duck sitting on a pond can probably see the entirety of the sky without needing to turn its head. And I think that's really remarkable. There are animals where different kinds of vision get distributed between different kinds of eyes. So some jumping spiders have more than one pair of eyes. There's one central pair that does like sharp, acute color vision. But then there's another pair to the side which handles movement. And if you block those eyes, the rest of the spider cannot detect things moving in front of them. Again, very, very unusual, very different from what we do. Our eyes are actually very unusual in being very, very sharp. Like we have excellent eyesight. Well, I mean, I don't. I wear like heavy contacts. But like in general, humans have very good eyesight, surpassed only by eagles and other birds of prey. And if you think about the eyesight that other animals have, you realize that much of the world looks very different to them than to us. Like to a lion, from most distances, a zebra looks like a donkey. Lions can't see zebra stripes. They just fade into gray. Even with vision, even with the sense that I think at least sighted people are most familiar with and rely on the most, the sense that dominates our culture, our language, it's really different in probably the majority of other creatures.
One point I want to get to, Ed, before we run out of time, I think this is maybe a key takeaway from your book, is that understanding animals' senses can help us humans be better neighbors to them and figure out the ways that our behavior, our buildings, whatever, can really interfere with creatures in surprising ways. What kind of lessons do you hope we can learn from this?
Yeah, so, you know, in small ways we've already talked about, I think people can, you know, be better owners of their pets if they really think about their pets' senses and cater their behavior to the animals. But there are bigger consequences too of this tendency to assume animals live in the same umwelt as us. We flood the world with light and sound that distracts animals, that confuses them, that drives them away from habitats they would otherwise do really well in. These the consequences of this sensory pollution can be huge. You know, it can reduce pollination of plants. It can have fatal consequences for turtles and birds by diverting them into buildings or beaches instead of their migration paths or the sea. We don't really think of sensory pollution as a problem because we don't really think of light and noise as pollutants, but they very much are. And I think that we need to start preserving the dark and saving the quiet, much as we would want to save a rainforest or a coral reef. Doing so creates a world which is more hospitable to the animals around us, and I think makes us closer to nature. You know, in the early pandemic, when people stopped moving about so much and were much quieter, we heard a lot more birds around us. And that's because in quiet, we hear over longer distances and we hear more. We become more connected to the world around us. And I think that can only be a good thing.
Ed, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Ed Young, science writer at The Atlantic. He joins today for a look at his new book, An Immense World, How Animal Senses Reveal the Hidden Realms Around Us. A lot more senses and animals that he gets into in the book, and you could share your stories about animal perception or your curiosity about it. Email ideas@wpr.org.